Warning, this episode contains brain food that will lead to improved emotional and social intelligence. Thanks for tuning in to Harvesting Happiness today for a healthy serving of consciously prepared brain food. This is Lisa Cypress-Kamen, your host. For more than 13 years, I've been handcrafting these sound ideas for better well-being. Each week, I love spotlighting diverse thinkers and doers who are contemporary trendsetters and change agents, devoting their lives to creating a better world in which to live. I invite you to listen up and change the way you think about human happiness. Our award-winning content is fresh, optimistic, and purpose-driven media that promotes well-being from the inside out. Alrighty then, let's dive in. This episode offers psychosocial education designed to inspire and motivate our listeners. The information provided does not constitute a therapeutic relationship nor a substitute for professional mental health care. If you are experiencing a mental health crisis, call 911, go to your nearest emergency room, or for listeners in the United States, text 988 for the National Suicide and Crisis Lifeline. Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, wherever you are. Thanks for joining me on today's show, where you will learn about cycle breaking and resilience building, healing intergenerational trauma. My guest today is Dr. Marielle Bouquet. Dr. Bouquet is a Columbia University trained psychologist, intergenerational trauma expert, and the author of the book Break the Cycle, a book that focuses on healing wounds of intergenerational trauma. Dr. Bouquet's clinical framework is holistic and infuses ancient and indigenous healing practices into a modern, comprehensive therapeutic approach. She provides healing workshops to Fortune 100 companies, including Google, Twitter, Capital One, and Facebook. She lectures within the psychology department of Columbia University. Also, Dr. Bouquet is widely sought after for her clinical expertise and trauma healing approach, and has been featured on major media outlets, including The Today Show, Good Morning America, and ABC News. Dr. Marielle Bouquet, thanks for joining me today.
Thank you so much for having me, Lisa. It's a pleasure.
It is a pleasure to have you. I enjoy working with trauma myself. I often tell people I work in the dark side.
Same. I enjoy this work.
Yes, I do too. Let's talk a little bit about the definition of intergenerational trauma, how it impacts our lives. And then for those of us out there who are saying, oh, no, I'm good, I had a perfectly great childhood, how we can make it relevant to everybody.
Well, yeah, you know, intergenerational trauma is actually the only type of trauma that can be handed down a family line. So we actually have found that intergenerational trauma is, in essence, at the intersection of our biology and our psychology, meaning that there is a genetic loading or our genetic makeup that is in part reflective of the experiences that our parents, grandparents, and distant ancestors have had to go through. And then when we're born, all of the psychology comes in, or our social experiences come in. And if we have a parent that perhaps themselves was too preoccupied with their own stressors or their own traumas, they could have missed cues to attune with us and could have contributed to, like, maybe attachment wounds or abandonment wounds. And even if we have, let's say, enough of a foundation and a connection to our parents in that season of our lives when we're developing, we also experience the rest of the world. We go into the school system, we could experience bullying, we could get into toxic relationships, we could suffer a pandemic, we could suffer other, you know, political experiences that cause collective wounds and collective trauma. And so we are already born with what one might say is like a vulnerability to stress or a predisposition to heightened emotions. And then here comes the rest of the world. Yeah. Basically to, like, you know, wound us in different ways. And once we have a parent that has themselves experienced trauma, and then we have their child now, let's say adult child, that is also in a state of trauma, we have what we call intergenerational trauma.
And I think world affairs today exemplify the petri dish of trauma that we are all living in.
Yeah. Petri dish. Wow. That full force imagery with the Petri dish. And that is exactly right. We are literally kind of in this social experiment of trauma, to be honest. You know, there is a lot that is wounding us at the global level, and we are indeed suffering, and we're suffering a lot. I mean, we have a global mental health crisis that, as I see it, the undercurrent of that global mental health crisis is trauma. We are people that have experienced deep wounds, and we haven't had the tools globally to really work through those wounds in order to really kind of get out of this crisis. And now, you know, there's a lot more coming, I believe.
Let's talk a little bit about some of the basic tools or skills that you talk about in your book, Break the Cycle, A Guide to Healing Intergenerational Trauma. What are a couple of tools that you could share with our listeners that they might immediately begin to practice to help better manage their trauma, or perhaps even recognize that it's there?
You know, a lot of the tools that we actually can incorporate into our lives to help us to carry the world in a way that feels lighter to our minds and bodies, they're actually pretty accessible. And I always go to the true and tested tool that is available basically to all of humanity. Like, if we're alive, we have a breath. And if we have a breath, we have an opportunity to actually recenter and to make it so that our bodies feel like they're carrying the world in a more tolerable way. However, when we're talking about deep breathing, which is what I'm alluding to here, we very often take a few breaths and then say, okay, well, this is not really helping, or okay, I did the task.
I did the exercise. Check that box.
Right. When in reality, you know, deep breathing requires a minimum of 5 minutes in order for our nervous system to actually catch up to the fact that we're trying to help it to relax. And when I say 5 minutes, people are typically like, wow, who has 5 minutes? When, you know, we actually put it in context and think about how many minutes we have in a day, which is 1,440, and we take 5 of those minutes to actually recenter and help ourselves to feel more at ease, it feels like easy math, or like an easier task than what we may have imagined. So the breath is the very central place where we can actually start guiding ourselves into feeling a bit emotionally lighter.
It's interesting that you talk about carrying the world. I have such a strong image of that in my mind, as you said it, and you said it a couple of times. I think many of us do feel as though we are carrying the world on our shoulders, or the world in our hearts right now. And you talk about these 5 precious minutes of self-care that also gives us back control, right? When we talk about a trauma response, right? That's often triggers this sense of being so out of control. And I see how the breath, coming into the breath, gives some of that back.
It does. It's a very empowering practice for that reason. And a lot of what we can say about a trauma response, the basic premise of it is the perception that something is out of our control, and that the control has been placed on someone else's hands, right? Like, someone has control over our freedom, our livelihood, our capacity to stay alive. Like, these are, when we feel like something is happening to me and I can't stop it, that is the basic premise of like where, you know, a trauma response stems from. So of course, when we incorporate a practice that we actually do have control over, it's gonna actually help us in the area of trauma as well.
And what you describe as that sense of feeling out of control, that everything is being controlled externally, to a certain degree, that is a truth, right? That we actually, as an individual sitting, listening to this episode, have only limited control of what's going on out there, but we have a lot of control, ultimately, of what's going on within ourselves.
Absolutely. And whenever I talk about how we can go back into spaces that actually traumatize us or spaces that are unhealthy for us at the very least, I oftentimes try to orient people around, well, how can we help you to metabolize the realities of the world that you exist in, whether that's your family world, it's your community world, it's the global world, wherever you're like focusing, you know, wherever your focus is, it's important that we engage in the process of helping you to feel safer and more well, even if any of those environments are not changing. If your family members aren't changing, if your community is holding on to the same values and practices that can be harmful to you, and if the global world is in chaos and very much how we've seen it in the recent years, and you don't feel like you have a direct way of like really kind of making that go away, you can still have some control over how you are internalizing all of these people or experiences.
And this is one of the ways to break the cycle, right? When you talk about that skill of breaking the cycle or the skill of building resilience, it actually starts quite small.
It does. But those small efforts actually accumulate. And with regards to, let's say, the breathwork practice, and of course, you know, there is so much more than the breathwork, but that is a beautiful, beautiful place to start and a beautiful foundation to establish when we're doing trauma-based work. But a lot of what neuroscience is teaching us is that we require an approximate 300 or so repetitions of a body-based practice in order for our nervous system to actually establish it as a more of a default, as more of the ways in which we then organize our emotional lives inside of our nervous system. And whenever I say 300, people think, my goodness, 300? I have to do this 300 times? And then I start again, putting it in context. We have 365 days in a year. If you take almost all of those days to actually engage in the practices that are going to restore your nervous system back to a healthy enough baseline so that life can feel more tolerable, it doesn't sound like a long time if you yourself have been living in 4 or 5 decades of hurt.
Yeah.
Right? So when we actually map it out that way, people are like, you know what? That year doesn't seem too bad after all.
And you're talking about an investment in the self. And if one is constantly in this state of a heightened alert or a trauma response, it's very hard to see the value in investing in self because you're trying to get away from those feelings that are so terrible, numbing them out in other ways.
Exactly. And so what we're doing is that, you know, my practice is holistic, so it's very mind, body, spirit. So I incorporate practices that are also going to help us to carve out some of the wounds in the mind and like really kind of like process them, right? There's also going to be the body element, the breathwork, and other practices that are also going to be help the nervous system to settle. And then in the spirit practices, it's more about how do you connect to others and how do you connect to yourself in a way that is healthy and fluid and wholesome and bridges connection. And so when we're doing all of those things on a continuous basis, it is creating a very holistic and comprehensive way of us actually like being able to carve out those wounds and then at least do away with a good portion of them so that life can feel like it's more tolerable.
We're going to need to take a break, and I'm going to ask a question. We might not be able to answer it until we come back, but I want to get your take on the need to always talk through one's trauma. Because I think that some people think, well, if I dive into this work, it's going to be so yucky, so hard, so ugly. I just don't want to go there. And I know that there's a research that advocates both, you know, sort of the diving in rather than the returning home to oneself and one's body, you know, and that maybe therein lies the holistic approach that we can talk more about.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think there is healing that can happen in both areas, and there's healing that can happen in integrating even those two ideas.
Let's take a break. We'll be right back to continue the conversation with my guest today, Dr. Marielle Bouquet. We're talking about her book, Break the Cycle, A Guide to Healing Intergenerational Trauma. To learn more, please visit www.drmariellebouquet.com. And on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram, the handle is the same, Dr. Marielle Bouquet. Here comes the pause. We'll be right back.
Each day, we have the intellectual freedom to be happy or the liberty to be miserable, regardless of external circumstance. If you or someone you know is struggling with mental health, seek support because good psychological health is vital in the achievement of a happy and satisfying life. Visit harvestinghappiness.com for psychosocial educational resources to boost emotional and social intelligence. Like what you hear on Harvesting Happiness? Sharing is caring. Pay it forward by spreading the word to your community and through social media. Subscribe, listen, and share hundreds of downloadable episodes from wherever you get your podcasts. Connect with and follow us on most social media channels. And we're back talking about cycle breaking and resilience building, healing intergenerational trauma with my guest today, Dr. Marielle Bouquet. Let's get back to the conversation.
So, Dr. Marielle, prior to the break, we've sort of tiptoed into an approach to trauma healing because many people think, well, I just got to talk about it. Like the only way I can heal this is if I talk about it. And that talking can be so painful and yucky.
Yes. And it can be actually even re-traumatizing for a lot of folks because they're going in their minds, in their bodies, and in their spirits. They're literally being teleported back to the actual event. And so what I have found to be the most prudent way to actually get into trauma work for the long term is to first help a person absorb tools, first help them to settle their nervous system, settle their bodies, integrate an understanding of how they can feel safe within their bodies. And that is why I bring in so many of those experiences of nervous system regulation, ventral vagal stimulation, which is, you know, the part of the nervous system that actually helps us to feel more calm and restored, like bringing in a lot of those experiences into the therapeutic work first so that we can help a person feel more grounded, feel more leveled. And then we transition into the work that I call like more of the digging work, right? Which is very synonymous with, of course, like, you know, the family tree, and we're digging into the roots and we're tending to the trunk and the leaves. And we're like really getting into the meat of, okay, what has happened here in your world that has actually contributed to the wounding that you're carrying? Let us understand this a little bit better now that you are feeling one, more settled in your body to be able to tolerate your own story. And two, that you actually have the tools to regulate and resource yourself and bring yourself back into a steady place if any part of your story feels like it's unnerving you.
I've just picked up on what you said about tolerating your own story, because I think that some people actually can use their story they weaponize it. You know, and other people are so adverse to their story, they never want to talk about it.
Wow.
And then oftentimes when you go into the story, you see that it's in part not even your story, which is the intergenerational work. It's like somebody else's story in the rearview mirror that you inherited the story and made it your own.
Yes. Yes. And when we can actually understand that piece, it actually is a really critical moment in helping us to then move into the third phase of that trauma healing, which is integration. It's the understanding that, you know, I had a mother that would actually scream and yell at me whenever she felt any bit of stress. And that was her trauma response. Like her nervous system was so unnerved and she felt so out of body in her own life that what she would do was to yell to kind of cathart and get that tension out of her body. But that would then implode upon us and create wounds in our lives. I like to actually do things differently. I like to settle the ways in which my nervous system is responding to the stress around me so that then I can decide to break that cycle. And time and again, we integrate that lesson, that insight into the work. So that's the integration part of healing.
Which is very beautiful work. It's very empowering work. And when you describe it in the eloquent way that you do, it does not feel scary. And I think this is the invitation to people, you know? Mm-hmm.
And that's a big part of my work. It's to actually make trauma work feel digestible enough for all of us, for it to feel palatable, because we are in a deep state of trauma as a global community. And if we continue to not want to touch it, not touch trauma, not actually engage in it, even if we are actually, as you say, weaponizing our own experiences of trauma, like that's still not touching it, because we're not going into the depths of it to actually heal the wound. And so whatever way we have decided, whether avoidance, weaponizing, or otherwise, we are just carrying those wounds and continuing to feel hurt. Instead, if we can find it to be palatable enough and actually feel like the work is digestible enough and doable enough, then it brings us to a completely different place when it comes to trauma healing.
And I think it activates empathy to such a degree that it allows us to soften in our response to the wounds of others.
Oh, yes. Big time. When we're able to really touch our hearts and say, wow, that hurts. I am hurt, and really humanize ourselves and like really feel into our pain in a way that, of course, doesn't dive us deep into the depths of despair where we can't get out, right? Like that's why the model is structured to actually help us work through all the different elements of these kinds of wounds. But when we can actually do that, it also sends a bit of that compassion and understanding of how deep a pain can go to other people, even people that are nothing like us.
And that's the medicine. Like, it's not only the medicine for ourselves, it's the medicine for the world. And this is, I think, the blind spot that we don't necessarily see or pay attention to right now, because we're mired in fear and anger.
That's so beautifully said. I got chills with you saying that. That's exactly what I hope we can internalize in this season of our generational healing that is, you know.
Ooh, it's there.
It's there. And I'll be honest, I think a lot of us are indeed ready. I think we're ready for the generational healing that is necessary right now. And I hope that we can see it, as you say, as the medicine and the balm that we need to inculcate into our society.
Let's talk a little bit about intergenerational resilience.
Yes.
We're almost out of time. So I want to make sure that we hit upon that, because it is as powerful in our makeup as the trauma.
Absolutely. It is. And it is oftentimes what we leave out of the equation. So I'm happy we're not doing that here.
Yes.
And intergenerational resilience refers to the wisdom and the strength that has been passed down our family line that is also embedded in us. And it's not just embedded in us by way of like what was modeled. It is embedded in us also in our genetic makeup. So, you know, with generational resilience, there is also a biological element that we're now starting to recognize even more. And this is more in its infancy stages from a perspective of science, but we're getting an understanding that our bodies are also structured, even at the genetic level, to actually undergo the very same stressors that our parents, our grandparents, and our ancestors have actually had to go through. So our body, in essence, is preparing us. Yes, isn't that fascinating?
That's fascinating.
Yeah, so there is a biological element as well as a psychological element, just the same as there is with generational trauma. There is the same with generational resilience.
And I believe that we are more resilient than we give ourselves credit to be. Like, we're hardy. Like, humans are hardy.
We are. I believe that we need to remember that. We need to remember the strength and resilience that we come from. We need to look in the eyes of the people that are a part of our family and look at their strength and look at the ways that they've imparted that strength upon us. Remember that when we're in tough situations, when we enter spaces where we feel like we don't feel like we have some sort of strength or courage, we need to go back to that lesson. Remember where you came from. Remember who you are and go back into that truth so that you can stand sturdy wherever you land on earth.
Dr. Mariel Bouquet, thank you for sharing and reminding us of who we are and what capacity we have to heal and transform ourselves. We've been talking about your book, Break the Cycle, A Guide to Healing Intergenerational Trauma. To learn more, please visit drmarielbouquet.com. And that's B-U-Q-U-E is the spelling of Bouquet. And you can find Dr. Mariel at Dr. Mariel Bouquet on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Thank you from the fullness of my heart for sharing part of your day with me and our audience.
Thank you so much for doing the same with me. It's been such an honor.
Thanks for joining us on Harvesting Happiness today. This is Lisa Cypress-Kamen on behalf of my guest, Dr. Mariel Bouquet, wishing you kind thoughts, kinder words, and the kindest of actions. Until next time, remember, happiness is an inside job. Happiness is your inside job. Please go out and rock your day and remember to be kind to one another. Want to take a deeper dive into sound ideas for better well-being? Check out our new bonus edition content, More Mental Fitness by Harvesting Happiness, available exclusively on Medium and Substack. Keep harvesting your own happiness anytime, anywhere, from the comfort of wherever you are. Subscribe, listen, and share hundreds of downloadable episodes from wherever you get your podcasts. Connect with and follow us on most social media channels. To learn more about lifestyle management and mental fitness consulting services, please visit harvestinghappiness.com. Harvesting Happiness and More Mental Fitness are produced by me, Lisa Cypress-Kamen, Andrea Mengele, Robin Boyd, Andrea Daly, and the awesome team at Podfly Productions, including Eric Begay, Kimberly Beck, and Alec Guess, in collaboration with TogiNet Radio, KBUU, RadioMalibu.net, and is available on PRX, the Public Radio Exchange.